So my friend and I'm not going to tell you his name yet, are going to share stories about challenges, growth, mistakes we've made going back 5, 10, even more years, because today we're celebrating our teaching and coaching anniversaries together. So if you feel like you're starting something big, like becoming a teacher, or you want to pivot like us into accent coaching, or maybe it's just getting difficult finding time for your language practice, then this is going to be a really inspiring episode for you. And you'll even get to hear how I knew that I was going to be a teacher at age 7. So let's get on with the show. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks, and so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. I'm so glad to see you again. And I wanted to say that, I don't know if you remember this, but one of the first times that we did a podcast episode together or a clubhouse thing, I don't even remember what it was. I remember asking you about how to pronounce your name correctly because I've had trouble with people mispronouncing my name. And I thought, even though I'm speaking some Spanish these days, I don't know where the syllable stress is in your name. So why don't you, because I'm calling you Drew these days, why don't you tell us your full name and give us a little background about you for people who don't know you?
Sure. So hi, it's good to see you again. And I always love doing collabs with you. And it's always a pleasure to be here. So my name, we know that probably if you guys watching, you know that in English, like stress changes and we have schwas and we have reduced vowels and stuff like that. But in Spanish, we don't. So you're going to say the 3 syllables clearly in my name, and the main stress is on the 2nd syllable. So it's Asdrúbal. That's how you pronounce it. But I always ask my English-speaking friends to call me Drew because it makes it a lot easier for them. I'm from Guatemala. I was born and raised here in Guatemala. I'm 28 years old, and I'm an English teacher. Actually, today, as you guys can see in the title, we're talking about our experience and how long we've been doing this, a long time for the both of us. And I consider myself a passionate educator. I feel like I could die teaching. I know I'll be doing this for a long time.
Wow.
And
let me stop you there for a second.
Sure.
So you say you could die teaching. I presume die happy. And so let's rewind the clock because we're celebrating some anniversaries. Why don't we start back in the day? So tell us, how did you know you wanted to teach, or what were your beginnings like back then?
Well, it was kind of weird actually because I knew I wanted to be a teacher. I just didn't know I wanted to be an English teacher because I started with no training at all. I didn't get the proper training because my original plan after graduating from high school was clinical psychology. Then, 4 years into the major, I realized I probably look more like a patient and not a therapist. So I dropped out of college. Do I regret it? I actually don't. I feel like I learned a lot. Psychology is super interesting and it goes hand in hand with education. So many of the things I learned, I still apply to this day. But I was already working as a teacher. It was probably my hobby. I was in love with English since school. And not at the beginning, though. It was hard for me. I graduated with an upper intermediate level. So they called me to cover for a teacher for a couple of weeks. And because I was already going to the school I graduated from once a week to teach psychology, because I was studying psychology. So I was like teaching the class of psychology to 11th grade, the equivalent to 11th grade in the States. Mm-hmm. So they called me like, hey, you have a good level of English. Why don't you cover for this teacher? It's just going to be a couple of weeks. And I said, why not? She never came back. I think she got sick, or my theory today is she found another job. But I stayed there for a full semester from July till the end of the year. And they offered me the position for the next year. So yeah, that's how I started, but it wasn't in my plans. It wasn't part of my plans. I was applying to call centers and stuff like that. So I didn't start with the proper training, but they were like training me along the way. And little by little, I started falling in love with teaching, but I was still teaching psychology, philosophy as well, research methodologies at this school. So I thought, well, since I'm studying psychology, when I finish, I can be a teacher at a university or something like that, but Spanish classes. Then the pandemic hit, and that was when I said, maybe this is what I'm gonna do for a living. And I fell in love even more with the language and teaching. So here I am, 10 years later.
Oh my God. That's so funny too, because I mean, I know you, we've done a lot of stuff together, but I also, COVID was really a turning point for me,
It
right?
was.
And that's now, it's been 5 years, right? At least since like the shutdown and things like that. And I think we kind of have like a parallel thing going on. You know, you're much younger than me, I think, but because I was not fresh out of school when a couple years before that I had already had my master's and things like that. But that was when, for me at the same time, COVID was like a catalyst, let's say, right? Because I was also working in a school. I had been working in a school already for like 5 years, and it didn't really suit me. I didn't love working in a high school. It just kind of wasn't for me. But it was the thing that brought me to Mexico. And as you know, I'm still here in Mexico. What is it now? Seven, eight years later, at least. Woof, long time. But then during COVID, right, I had a lot of personal experience working online, you know, taking classes. I did my master's online, and this was back in the day when everyone thought, you know, you were crazy or lazy. And but then COVID hit, and suddenly, oh, everyone suddenly knows what Zoom is, you know, and things like that. And I found that I was really overworked, you know, from all that, because we had to do just a lot more extra work and educating everybody. And I felt really burnt out. And I thought, you know what, I already have a lot of skills in this area, right, in the online space, not so much in social media. But for me, that's when I said, you know what? I'm not going to go back to the school when they open back up. I'm going to go full time teaching accents only, accent coaching, because before that I had been doing language. And so my pivot was more into that, right? So you also now are, I think, more known for kind of specializing in pronunciation and accent coaching too. So what happened there? Because I'm hearing you were teaching English, and then but we're missing a part of the story. So what happened then after COVID for you?
So, I mean, unlike you, that you didn't enjoy like the school experience, I did enjoy it. Like, I think it was a great start for me. Although, like, I think you and I share something else, that we're part of the LGBTQI plus community. And here in Guatemala, that is not always the best case scenario for a teacher. So, schools tend to be a bit traditional. So the reason why I never went back to school was because when I started posting content on social media, I felt more like myself, and I was more open about things that schools don't want you to be open about when you are a teacher. And I get it. Like, they have all the right. If it's a private school, like, whatever, they can set the rules. I'm not gonna fight with it. So I said, well, I'm already teaching online because a friend asked me for help to apply for a call center, and I helped him, and he said, why don't you start teaching online? I mean, we're all locked up. So I said, sure. Why not? So I opened my Instagram page, my TikTok page. My first TikTok was awful, but people started following me, especially people who already knew me. So,
Yes, thanks, Grandma. Thanks, Grandma, for downloading TikTok so soon
exactly,
to be following you.
So, well, the pronunciation thing is that during the pandemic, I started focusing more on improving my pronunciation. I started college, like, for my teaching degree in 2020, before the pandemic, and I had this course, or this subject, called oral communication and pronunciation. They were teaching us phonetics at college. So I fell in love with it. I fell in love with phonetics. When I started learning about phonetics, I realized, oh, so this is how you teach pronunciation. So this is what this is all about. So I fell in love even more with languages, right?
I gotta stop you. Like, stop right there, because that's how, let's rewind a little bit more in my history. The reason that I fell in love too, well, I wouldn't say with teaching English yet, but when I was in university, I was linguistics major. And
Oh, cool.
I had done a year in France as an exchange student. So my senior year of high school, I was in France. I come back and then I start going to university, right? And lo and behold, I don't know, this is not a common course, but in my university, there was a course called French Phonetics.
Yeah.
And I barely even knew what it was going to be about, but I signed up for it because, you know, I already spoke French and I thought, let me see what this is about. I need the credits. And man, did I fall in love with IPA and phonetics. Right. So for me, it was through French, because if you speak a little bit of French, you know, the pronunciation difficulties in English, a lot of them are, you know, thanks very much to the French. And so learning that was like, oh my God, there's so many vowels, and you can see it. You can chart it out. You can map it. Like, you can map the mouth. And suddenly it was like, why do we not learn this in school? You know,
exactly. Most people. Exactly. So that was my first contact with IPA. And I was like, oh, so this is why I was never able to pronounce the voiceless TH sound or something like that. So I started improving because I was intentional about it. And I started teaching it. I think I dropped out of college again because of other reasons. But I met Hadar. I'm pretty sure you know
who Hadar is. I was in her teaching club. Yeah, the teachers.
So I had already been following her for a while, and I knew she was using the IPA. I was just not familiar with it until I started learning it at school. I mean, at college. The thing is, I improved my pronunciation. Like, I saw progress. I realized I was moving forward when it comes to improving my accent or my pronunciation. So I started teaching and focusing on that. And that's when I started making my content more like leaning towards pronunciation and understanding the difference between pronunciation and accent and helping people realize that even if it's not your main goal, like, you don't need to sound like a native, but you can if you want to. So yeah, that's how it all started. Like, that's how I became like a pronunciation coach. And now I'm back at school, back in college. And I had to take that class again this semester, actually, because when I dropped out, I didn't finish the semester. So I had to take it again. It's so funny because the first half of the semester was like, I already know everything, but I'm still going to pretend I don't and study it again. And there was a part about connected speech and things like that was kind of challenging because I usually focus more on the IPA and intonation and stuff. But then when we started learning about connected speech and linking and assimilation and things like that, I had to review. So it was a challenge and I loved it. And I was always participating in class. I was so, in Spanish, we use the word castroso. That is someone who is, you know, that person who's always raising their hand because they think they know everything. That was me. That was me in the pronunciation class.
Yeah. How great, like, though, you get to shine and you're like, and you're probably looking to your classmates going, no, guys, really, this is the best. This is so useful, you know, and they don't even realize probably how important it is to kind of like with my French phonetics class. It was like, oh, like a light bulb just went off. And I thought, this is the best tool that I can think of to kind of bridge the gap, right, between what people have not learned and what we kind of know somewhere in our brains, but it doesn't really make sense until we have this tool, you know? So yeah, this is awesome. And it's so funny that you're kind of relearning this again, because we're recording this in June, and I don't know if you're a fan of Broadway, but the Hamilton musical is 10 years old this year. So I'm doing a series of videos. So speaking of like kind of relearning and digging deeper than you ever did before, I'm looking at all of the music for Hamilton and the lyrics and things like that. And I'm just digging in there with like both hands. And I'm just shocked at all the little things that I'm seeing that I never saw before. You know, even being a fan of the musical for so long, but just like trying to explain it to other people and break it down. Like you said, the connected speech, right? There's different, like different kind of rules or patterns that we follow. And if you think about like the rapping in Hamilton or just connected speech in general and just the amazing little things that go into it. So I've also had like a resurgence lately in like, oh my God, this is amazing. How do I teach this? And I get so excited about sharing these things, you know,
everybody. Like going back to what you mentioned about your French phonetics class, I feel like even though you are a native speaker of English and I'm not, like we both went through the same experience because I was learning the language and the phonetics of the language in order to become a better teacher, if you will. Mm-hmm. And even though you were already a native speaker of English, you still went through the experience of learning the phonetics of a different language, which gave you that valuable experience of being a student, of a learner of a second language. I think that adds a lot of value to our teaching practice.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I would say, so I don't know if I ever told you this, you know, most people in the U.S., they have a second language in school, in high school, and generally it's Spanish. Well, where I grew up, it was actually closer to the Canadian border. So we had a choice between Spanish and French. And because we're so close to Canada, I took French. And so I never took any class in Spanish until I moved to Mexico. So now I'm learning Spanish, right? But kind of also through French, because, you know, they're both Latin languages and they've got a lot of similarities. And also when I was younger, let's say, I also lived in Jordan. So I was learning Arabic when I was there.
I did not know that.
And so I would say now my Spanish is better than my Arabic. But also in high school, I think in high school or university, I forget, I had the opportunity to take some Russian. I took a semester of German as well. So like for me, I just love how, let's say L1, language one, is going to influence any other language, you know, that you speak, or other languages, you know, that you speak. And so, like when you were mentioning earlier about the vowels, you know, maybe somebody out there is listening and going like, oh yeah, I didn't really realize that, you know, whether they're a Spanish speaker or not, they might not know that. So I feel like besides this tool of IPA, another thing that's super valuable is knowing just kind of about people and languages and learning styles and you know, where they're coming from, you know, to better pinpoint all that stuff that's going on. So I'm sure we've both become amazing teachers in the last couple of years. Let's talk about then also the business side of things, because you've been teaching for 10 years and we can say now the last 5 years for you have been online, but also since we first met, I've seen your growth just like rocket, you know. So talk to me a little bit about some of the challenges you've overcome, you know, going from like, let's say, casual TikToker to now and having classes. And I know you're going to tell us about a class that's opening up in July again and stuff like that. But tell us how you kind of have dealt with making this work on your own, let's say.
So I feel like the greatest challenge that I'm still learning to face or to overcome is being your own boss in some way. Even though like people always ask me, like when I meet someone in person, someone who follows me, it happened to me a couple of weeks back and it was amazing. Like I was drinking with a couple of friends and the waitress or the server at the restaurant, she stopped me when we left. She was like, excuse me, are you Asdrubal? And I said, yeah, hi. I follow you on social media and I just want to tell you that I started learning English because of you. Those words, like, oh, it makes me want to cry because like I'm these days I've been in the mood of I'm happy and I can't believe and I'm shocked about 10 years of experience. But the thing is, being your own boss is the biggest challenge because I have never been the most organized person in the world. So I worked at three different schools before working at the university I'm teaching at right now. And they helped me a lot with order and organization, lesson planning, you know, those things that even though there are plenty of resources online now, you still need to have some knowledge about it. They gave me structure. I felt safe working at a school because I had a framework. I had deadlines. I had a boss asking me for, hey, I want to see what you're doing, right? What you're teaching. Now that I'm on my own, it's super challenging sometimes, like pushing myself to do my best. Like, I always try to do my best, but, like, pushing myself to be a bit more organized. I've bought, you have no idea how many notebooks, lesson planners I have here of all the times I've tried to become a more organized person. So that's been the biggest challenge. But even, like, despite all those failed attempts, I've still enjoyed the experience of becoming an online trainer, coach, whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, those are some of the challenges. Another challenge is your income. Like, you have to get used to the idea of having
fluctuating
income. Yeah, fluctuating income.
Unreliable.
Like, it's unreliable because you don't know, like, you can open a new course and 10 students enroll, but you're never 100% sure they will be there next month, the next month. So that has happened to me. And even when I've tried not to feel like it's my fault that one student says, hey, I won't be in the course next month, like, you always get that feeling, like, did I do something wrong? Is the class not engaging enough?
You can't help it. Yeah, you always think it's about you. When exactly. In reality, you know, if you talk to people after the fact, a lot of times they're just too busy, right? They have obligations, right? I'm the same way. I think, oh, it must all be about me, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just my ego talking when I know for a fact most of the time it's not, you know.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's not a good fit, and that's cool. That's great, because I'd rather have a hard no than a I don't really know, you know, and because there's plenty of other ways for people to help themselves, and there's plenty of other coaches there that it could be a better fit, you know.
And exactly. Another thing, and like one of the most valuable lessons that I've learned as a teacher, and that I always try to be clear about since the beginning with my students, is that there is no, help me with this phrase because I always forget, there is no one size fits all.
Oh, yeah, I think that sounds right. There's no one size fits all, right? Yeah. If we're talking about solutions, we're talking
exactly.
about, yeah, nothing's perfect, right?
So,
yeah.
And we all learn in different ways. So what mm-hmm. I do with my private classes, because I also teach private one-on-one lessons, what I do in my conversation clubs, what I do in my group lessons, what I do in my TikTok lives might not work for everyone the same mm-hmm. way. Some people... Mm-hmm. reach out to me because what they were doing before was not working for them. And suddenly they come across my page and they're like, this is the guy I want to learn from. And it ends up working. So yeah, I've learned that throughout the years. That's why every year I try to be more specific
down.
About my target, like who I'm reaching.
Your audience,
for.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You want to niche down every year a little bit more and specific about your target audience. Yeah, that
exactly.
totally makes sense. And what you said about the different kind of, how do I want to say, medias, I guess, is like, do you notice this too, that the dynamic is completely different, right? The feel of how you're doing each different thing. Like if I'm in a one-on-one lesson, it's a totally different feel because my client mm-hmm. is kind of driving the bus, right? And we're doing everything about what they need versus a group lesson, right? And then it's about the experience. It's about creating the community for me versus like doing something that's broadcast, you know, that's a one-to-many kind of thing. And I want to say what you mentioned earlier about this person who came up to you and said this great thing is that I don't know about you, but I often forget like, oh, you know, I'm just busy making media. And I sometimes forget that we reach human beings and people
exactly.
and they affect their lives, you know, and it's really interesting that when that click happens, you know, when they find something valuable or meaningful, or you explain something in just the right way that gives them motivation or satisfies, let's say, a need that they had. They needed a little thing and you were the one to be able to express that to them. Oh, I just love that. Like that's my favorite thing.
Yeah. I don't know if this has happened to you, but like sometimes we content creators in general, we experience this infamous imposter syndrome. Because sometimes when I read comments on, like, I'm always checking comments and the interactions on media, because you kind of start becoming an expert in those things when you post content. So I always check, like, who's seen the video, who's liked the video, who has commented on the video. And sometimes I get comments like, thank you, teacher, I always learn a lot from your videos. And I start thinking, like, is that comment, like, genuine? Have they really learned something from my videos? So I start second-guessing myself.
Did they take the time? Like, they took the time to write this, right? So,
yeah.
So even that's a big ask, I feel like, these days with people's attention spans and things like that. Side note, anybody listening to this, leave a comment. No, I'm just kidding. But, like, that's a lot of energy. And I don't know about you, but when I'm kind of scrolling or watching things, like, sometimes I think, oh, yeah, I'll leave a comment. But do I most of the time? No, that thought is quite fleeting. So even those, I feel like those little things, positive or negative, right? There's still some kind of reaction that provoked something strong in somebody, you know? So I think, I think that you're totally on the right track. And speaking of creating content, imposter syndrome, did you ever feel like you had a growth in maybe making videos, editing the videos, sending them out, that kind of thing? Because for me, that was a big hurdle. Not so much being camera shy or anything like that, but for me, it was more the technical aspect. So in terms of that kind of tech stuff, what do you feel like were your areas of growth lately in there?
So I feel like my first couple of years creating content was basically using the TikTok app. Like, mm-hmm. I would just literally record the video on TikTok, use the TikTok editing tools, which are really good, and then download the video, sometimes with watermark, because I didn't know there was an option for, I didn't know a lot of things, so I've improved that. Like, now I don't use TikTok, I use CapCut, so I use the app to record the video and edit and include captions and stuff. So now I can post that same video to both of my social media, sometimes to YouTube as well. I use the paid version because I learned that if you want better quality, sometimes you have to pay for things. Sometimes the free stuff is enough.
Can I pause you for a second? Do you mean you pay for the version of CapCut or for TikTok? CapCut.
So I've improved my editing. I mean, they're still, I consider they're basic. Mm-hmm. But for example, I already include captions, sometimes both in Spanish and English. Mm-hmm. And I try to use a beautiful color or something that matches. Yeah. I'm kind of picky when it comes to how things look. So the aesthetic of the video. Uh-huh. So I've improved a lot in that. Also sound quality. I buy microphones. I buy things like that. Right. But it's always like, I don't know about you, but like I edit my own videos and sometimes a 1 minute video takes 20, 25 minutes to edit.
People don't realize from start to finish, let's say conception, maybe writing a draft of a script, like actually filming, saying like, oh man, I ran out of battery. Let me charge this thing up again and do it over. And then the editing and then the posting and writing up there's just so many things, right? Mm-hmm. And that people don't realize every 1 minute of video that somebody watches, it takes probably about an hour, right? Yeah. And that's with seasoned hands, right? That's with like having some experience like you or I, you know? And so people don't realize how much work goes into it, you know? And so I know you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I know what the work is.
Same for you. Like when I see your videos, they are so good. Like I'm talking about the technical part, of course the content as well is super useful. But now that we're talking about the tech stuff, wow, your videos are amazing. And I know that I'm capable of doing that, but sometimes, to be honest, I'm just like, I'm gonna stick to the simple things now, just for now, because I have a lot of work. Now that I'm on vacation, I will probably start my own podcast. I'm not announcing it yet because I don't want to be a liar. But
by the time this comes out, then we're going to know.
Maybe, yeah. But
I'll do your first episode with you. Don't worry.
Oh, please. Yeah. You'll definitely be one of my first guests. Absolutely. The thing is, it takes time. It's you're investing a lot of, sometimes not just money, but time. And you learn, and it's cool because you learn things and skills that you never thought you would use.
Yes, yes. Not only that, I feel like I've learned and forgotten more skills than a lot of people have ever learned, you know, in some of these things. Like I don't know if this is the case with you, but a while ago I was like, well, gonna have to learn WordPress now, right? Gotta do that first website for free. Did my WordPress, promptly forgot how to do it, but went through the motions on that. It was hours and hours, right? Yeah. Not just the money, like you said, it's the time. But coming back to the videos, and when you mentioned CapCut and you said, you know, the pro version is just worth it, I can tell you what's worth it to me is I have an editor now. Like, I don't edit my own stuff hardly anymore.
That's
if there's
so
something
nice.
Special that comes up, if it's like a last minute thing, like I'll do it. But like you said, I'll do it in a basic way, right? Done is better than perfect. So for me, like I'll still do those things on my own. But now what I'm trying to do, if we're talking like business strategy, let's say, is I'm trying to hand off all the things that I could do, but is probably not where I should be spending my time. And I'm trying to spend my time, for example, writing the script, right? I know I can get someone to write scripts for me maybe in the future, but nobody knows that stuff like I do. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I've spent a lot of time revising it and things like that. So where's my time best spent these days? Writing scripts for YouTube videos, right? Finding interesting people for podcast episodes. These things, I believe, are what we call evergreen. So for people who are listening, evergreen means it's not, I don't know, New Year's 2026. You know, it's not a special edition kind of thing that's one and done. Evergreen is content that is always going to be useful, you know, for somebody. So I'm focusing more on the evergreen stuff. And believe it or not, I would say more long format stuff, because the shelf life of a short or a reel is not that long. You know, I mean, I know we can repost and things like that. And I know attention spans are getting shorter. But I think the pendulum is swinging the other way, too, where now people are going to be more interested in calming kind of long format, like, oh, I'm going to read this entire article, you know, and things like that. So I feel like the pendulum might be swinging.
And I feel like there's always going to be, I mean, because sadly, kids and teenagers are going to face a world that will not require a super long attention span from them. And I know that's a reality, but I feel like there's always going to be an audience for us that like who like to speak a little bit more. Because I've tried short format videos, and even though I always try to stick to 1.5 minutes, I miss my long videos from YouTube. But I feel like there's always going to be someone who watches, because I watch long video format when I'm eating. Like every time I have breakfast, lunch, or dinner, I always play a video of a podcast that I like, or a YouTuber that I follow, and I pay attention. Like I'm eating and I'm actually interacting, and I also use it as my passive English practice, because newsflash, you still need to practice every day. So yeah, I feel like there's always going to be someone who is willing to watch what we do.
Exactly. And I think what you said too speaks to like how there's different audiences for different things, right? So if one person, when they're eating, they tend to scroll and they're looking at 1 minute videos, right? You've got some of that. Someone's going to be like, oh, who's this Drew character, right? I wonder what he can teach me today. And then you might get somebody who then says, oh, I really like his stuff, and I'm going to watch some of his longer stuff too. So I think it also, you know, having both of those, shall we call them feeds, I guess, or funnels or whatever, then it gets people who are more interested, and they're kind of self-selecting, right? Because not everyone's going to want that. Good. I don't want all the people from all the places who only want, let's say, short little tips and tricks, right? I'm looking in the end for people who are interested in this, like us, you know? That's the ideal kind of person for us.
Yeah, I am very intentional. I consider myself a very intentional content consumer, I guess. Even with English videos, like I still watch teachers online on TikTok, especially, like because I still need to learn. Sometimes I forget things, or sometimes I just grab ideas. Like I like the way he's explaining this, so I'll probably do something similar. So I am very intentional about the things that I like. Sometimes I just watch something, and if I didn't like it, I just don't press on the like button. I'm that intentional. So I've seen that, sadly, again, the creators that have more followers are usually the ones that post videos, like 30-second videos. Like, however, sin embargo, but, pero. And that's great. That's great. Yeah. I have nothing against it. I've done a couple of videos that like that, but there is a native speaker that I follow. She's from the U.S. I'm not sure whether she's a teacher or not, but the way she explains things, first of all, she's always speaking in English, of course, but like the visuals, the way she presents the information and she explains the words, she's always like comparing things like, what is the difference between however, nevertheless, and things like that? And she gives you examples. And she says, but in the US, we say it this way. So it's a longer video for probably just two simple words.
Yeah.
It's a 3-minute video, but you get a lot of information from it.
A lot more of it. Probably more information from 1 3-minute video, or more helpful information than you would two, let's say, 1.5-minute videos.
Exactly.
You know? So, yeah, exactly. And I think what we do, what they do, even if none of us know it, is we're training our audiences, right? So we're training them to expect, hey, I'm the person that does, you know, I compare two words and that's it. And that's all you're going to see, right? So after you build up your content, you also kind of reinforce the kind of people that follow you, you know? Yeah. And I think I do the same thing, right? If I've watched 10 videos of somebody else's and they all kind of follow a pattern, well, on video 11, I'm gonna expect that too, you know?
Sure.
Oh, that's cool. Maybe there's another playlist and I'll check that out too. But you get trained, you know, in a way. So yeah, so. Okay, so I have one thing that I wanted to tell you, actually. And it's something I've learned, you know, throughout this time. We're talking about our anniversary. It's been 5 years, 10 years. Actually, let me rewind a little bit. How old was I when I started teaching? 7 years old. Like, and this is a memory that is so strong for me, but I was in the second grade, I think, and I lived in the state of Ohio. I don't know if you know about the state of Ohio. It's about as, we were at that time in the 80s, it was about as white as you can get. And so here I was in my school, and during that time, there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of wars and things going on in Asia. And we had, in our school, we had a little girl who was a refugee. And I didn't know what a refugee was at that time, but she was from Cambodia. And so this little girl came into my class and knew nothing of English, right? Her family had moved here. And I remember that my teacher saw that I was, I don't know, maybe antsy, bored, I don't know, gave me the job of teaching her English. And so I would put little post-it notes on things, like garbage can, window, you know, things like that. And I think that that's when I knew that I was good at teaching, right? Even from an early age. And then I learned I love languages, and later, you know, I put them together. And then we started talking about the tech stuff and the business stuff too. So I kind of wanted to share a quote that I have gotten. You said your bookshelf is full of things. I've also read a lot of books and taken a lot of courses and things like that. And there's this one kind of community that I'm a part of. And there's a saying that they have. This is a great quote for anybody who's looking to do like us, or who just is an English teacher and wants to kind of expand their English teaching business, which, write this down, guys, get a pencil. The quote is, "Your business will grow to the level of problems you're willing to handle."
Wow.
Right? And at first I was like, oh, that's a nice quote. But ever since then I've realized, I'm like, okay, I am willing to learn how to make a web page. I'm willing to learn WordPress. Okay, done. I am willing to now move that to Squarespace. Okay, done. Great. Now I am willing to learn about sales funnels, right? So every time you're willing to take on a problem, like, that's how you know there's growth happening there. Yeah. And I just wanted to share that too, since we were talking about tech and business, you know, and things like that. So for me, it's been a long time. For both of us, we're kind of celebrating our kind of COVID anniversary of 5 years and teaching even longer. But one final question for you, Drew, is, do you feel like you have any regrets, you know, in all this time?
Wow, that's a really deep question. But just before I answer, and I'll try to connect this idea to my answer. When you mentioned your story from Ohio, I also realized I wanted to be a teacher when I was little, because I was never good at with numbers. So math and classes like chemistry, math, statistics, like physics, it was always hard for me. I've always been a language guy, social studies, history, biology even. But my way of coping with this difficulty was memorizing stuff and understanding processes and then repeating them to my students. Like, okay, I need to explain this to someone for it to stay in my long-term memory. Back then, I did not know that was like a cognitive strategy and something that I now use with my students and things like that. Now the technical stuff, you know, but I became less shy. Because I was shy. I was super shy. So I got used to speaking in public. Then I got singing lessons. So I was used to singing in public. Then I started going to church. And in church, I was, again, the castroso, the know-it-all of the Bible. So I became a teacher at church. And a preacher. I was preaching. I was part of the youth branch, I guess, of the church.
Right. Yeah.
So I was every Saturday preaching and sharing messages about the Bible to teenagers, random people in my neighborhood, 20, 25 people every Saturday. So I started gaining experience until I realized I wanted to be a teacher. But what do I regret? Even though I already had all that experience when I started teaching, the only thing I regret is not realizing sooner that I wanted to be a teacher, like an English teacher, because I could have started my teaching degree earlier. But that is the only thing. Like, other than that, I would totally do everything exactly the same way I've done it, because I'm here because of the decisions I've made. It's been 10 years. Every time I say it, I just can't believe it and I want to cry. Because teaching and finding my dream and finding my passion, it happened when I was going through really dark times in my life. So finding my passion was like a life savior. Lifesaver? It was
lifesaver. Like, it was a lifesaver, yeah.
It was a lifesaver, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So whenever I felt like lonely, like I can't do this anymore, I'm just going down this depression hole or whatever.
Yeah.
I always felt, okay, but I'm still doing what I love. And okay, I'm going to record a video. I I'm going tomorrow to a different school to teach other teachers. This is always something that motivates me. And of course, I have friends and I have my safe space and I've got people who are always supporting me. But back in the day when I didn't know where to go or what to do, teaching was the thing that helped me stand up and helped me see the light at the end of the tunnel. So I know that some people, like, they find a job and they're like, I love my job. It's probably not their passion. I am privileged of having my job, and what I do for a living is at the same time what I love doing. Yes, so,
Passion, dedication, right? Motivation, all of these things, I think, like, how you just described that made me think about, like what is the thing that gives me the greatest joy? Absolutely, helping somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's on a regular day. And I know that when I'm kind of down in the dumps, right, you focus so much on yourself, right? Mm-hmm. But as soon as you can turn that around and help somebody else, like, that's the thing that helps me the most, right, is helping somebody else. So I think putting that into perspective and making it almost like a, like, this is a career choice. Yeah, I'm helping you guys, but it's for me. It gives me a lot of pleasure, you know, to do this. And isn't it amazing? Isn't it wonderful? I'm so grateful that we can live in an age where we can do this now, you know, and maybe that's really only truly been true since COVID, because suddenly everybody was online, right? And suddenly we wanted all that connection, and we found a way to kind of put all that together, you know. So part of it was us, and part of it was the climate and the environment and things like that. But it's opened up these doors, not just for you and me, but for all the people who want things like this, right? Maybe they want to speak more clearly so they can get a job promotion, or that they can make connections with people that they didn't feel comfortable with before. You know, to me, that's just like the icing on the top of the cake, I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Every time I finish like a semester at the university I teach at, or a course with, or a lesson with one of my private students, I always ask them, what are your takeaways? Like, not just what have you learned, of course, like, have you learned the past simple, the past progressive? Mm-hmm. Did you learn how to pronounce the word focus correctly? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's important. But
that's a good one.
I always ask them about their takeaways. And there's something I've heard a couple times that I know it's one of my signature elements of my lessons. And is a couple of my students always tell me, I feel safe. Like, I feel like I can make mistakes and I'm not being judged.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just, if that is the only thing they can take away, they learned from my class, or they learned in my class, that's enough.
That's
if
huge.
If they feel safe. Yeah.
Yes.
If they feel safe.
Volumes, because that just tells us that people didn't feel safe all that time, probably years.
Exactly.
You know? And so, so you're creating this little nest, right?
Yeah.
And so, because what's most important when somebody shows up to a group class, to one-on-one, shows up to watch a video, right? You cannot move forward without making mistakes, right?
Exactly.
And recognizing that you're making a mistake, you know, or an error. And so closing yourself off to even that possibility is doing yourself a huge disservice, right? So we have to make people feel really comfortable. Yeah. The one thing that I keep hearing over and over again for me, which I realize now is like, kind of like tells me what other people see me as, and that kind of, you know, gives me a positive feedback loop to kind of my identity as a teacher, is that people will often tell me, like, you know, I never got it until now. You know, like, people have explained it to me so many different ways, and I just never got it until now.
Yeah.
I think maybe my superpower is being able to break down things into units that are small enough to where things actually make sense, you know?
Yeah.
And so, because let's face it, language is complicated. Speaking
is
complicated. There's a lot going on. And so we need strategies, we need tools, we need people to help us, you know, and things like that. So speaking of which, you mentioned courses a minute ago, and I think you're opening up a course soon.
Yeah.
Is that right?
So every year I host this speaking club or conversation club online. It actually started back in February, but it stopped for a couple of months. So now in July 2025, whenever you're watching this, if it's till 2025, I'm probably still hosting the club. You can join. It's not like we are going to follow a strict sequence. It's just random topics every week that will help you develop that speaking practice that you probably don't have. It doesn't matter if you're already studying at a different place. It's not a language course. It's an opportunity and a space twice a week where you can speak, like literally just that.
Where you can make mistakes.
And you can make mistakes and you can build community with other people who are on the same path. And I'll be there to help you out, and I'll be there to ask you questions and correct pronunciation mistakes and things like that, but motivating you. So that's what I'll be doing. It's going to be twice a week, Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Guatemala time. I'm still not sure, like 7 or 7:30, but usually night or evenings because people work. So yeah, that's what I'll be doing. And I'm still teaching private lessons. So if I have any space available, you guys can reach out to me. And I'll be more than happy to give you all the information.
Awesome. Okay, where should we find you then? Is TikTok the best place? Do you have a website? Like, where do we...
I do, but I feel like the best option would be Instagram.
Okay.
It's the same user that I use on TikTok. That is Ingles con Asdru. That is my handle, my social media handle on both Instagram and TikTok. You can reach out to me on Instagram, and I'll be more than happy to help you.
Perfect. And we'll have, of course, we'll have those links down in the show notes and things like that. So people can reach out to you anytime. We're recording this in June. You're opening the club in July. But as you said, it'll be there until probably
November, December.
Okay, November, December. Okay, perfect.
That's my plan. So I...
And let's say this, guys. I know that, you know, podcast episodes are evergreen, so you can listen to this anytime. Maybe this is 2027 when you're getting around to this episode. That doesn't mean just because this conversation club isn't open now or then won't be something else, right?
So check out what there's always I'm always trying to innovate, so there's always going to be an option. If you reach out to me and I say, hey, I have no spots available, try again next month, because there's always going to be a chance.
Yeah, and I feel like this whole thing has kind of hovered around the ideas of, hey, if you are a teacher, if you are a learner, I've heard many times about experimenting, right? Just giving something a try. Don't be worried about making mistakes. You know, that's how things go. You gotta learn. You gotta spend time. Maybe you have to spend some money, you know, because let's face it, spending money makes things go faster. Generally, you learn quicker. And so I think the same things that we've learned in these past few years can be applied kind of to anybody doing this like us, or somebody learning English too. You know, the same skills, I feel like. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, as usual, Drew, thank you so much for joining us today. And we love talking together, and we have no trouble talking. So let's plan another episode soon. Actually, let's plan your first podcast episode.
Yeah.
And let's get that under your belt. Because like everything else, getting started is usually the hardest thing, right? Showing up is the hardest thing. Everything else will take
care of. I just feel like it's scary, like starting all over again, like something new, like because podcast is not the same as making a video on TikTok. So I'm just scared of feeling a beginner again in something. But it's exciting. It's just exciting.
And let us all just remember and support you and say, like, yes, it's difficult starting something new, especially for me when I look at, oh my God, podcast. Oh, I don't want to start it and then not finish it, right? Or not work on it. I don't want to start a big project and then drop it. So being ready, I think, to handle this challenge, like we said earlier, that shows so much growth. So we're here to support you, and we're going to be right behind you. So to lessen that. So
thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you again for coming. And guys, thank you so much also for showing up and listening to us today. We love you, and we'll talk to you again in an episode soon. Bye, guys. See you soon. Thanks again, everybody, for listening all the way to the end. And you know I like to share something personal that's happening at the time of recording, almost like a little time capsule, since these episodes are going to stick around for years. Well, today I want to tell you something related to my 5-year teaching anniversary. And if you're watching this podcast on YouTube, or you've seen some of my other YouTube videos starting in about 2025, you've probably seen my nice dark gray studio. So professional. Well, it wasn't always like this. In my apartment, there's a little room, tiny little room in the back, and that's where I started with my itty bitty teeny tiny studio. Well, after my roommate moved abroad this past year, we built this nice studio, and that poor little room kind of went unloved for about a year. But now it's getting a makeover. It's getting a facelift, and that room is getting fixed up to be kind of a meditation space for me, or a place where I can do some sewing or other crafts. course, don't tell anybody. It's probably just going to end up being storage, but at least it'll be pretty storage. But we'll see. I'll give you the update and tell you how things go, but I can't wait to show you the before and after pictures of what used to be my old studio and how that's going to evolve too, just like me. So until then, if you have a specific topic about accents or pronunciation that you'd like to hear about, let me know and I'll try to make it a reality. And if not, well, then I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye for now.